Good morning. It's Wednesday, February 4th. I'm Lou Ann Stevens, and this is Wichita's Early Edition from KMUW News. Did you know that 150 years ago, rural Kansas was home to a silk-making commune? We didn't either, but we'll learn about it after the news. Wichita residents have one more week to register for an upcoming election on a proposed city sales tax. The registration deadline for the special election is Tuesday. The proposed 1% sales tax would be used for a number of investments, including public services, relief programs, and redevelopment projects. People can register online or in person at multiple locations around Sedgwick County. You must be at least 18, a U.S. citizen, and live within Wichita City limits. Election Day is March 3rd. Mail-in voting begins next week. Several community members urged Wichita School Board members Monday night not to move forward with a plan to close four elementary schools. KMUW's Daniel Cottle reports.
District officials are recommending closing four elementary schools as soon as next spring: Lovature, OK, Pleasant Valley, and Woodland. They say the buildings are deteriorating due to age and have become too costly to repair. But some who spoke at the board meeting say the buildings are in poor condition due to years of neglect. Here's Josh Frederick.
50 to 100 years of deferred work are being modeled as if they all need to be done at once. And then closures are implied as the only rational response. That isn't engineering, that's budget storytelling.
The school board was set to vote last night on a timeline to close the schools, but board president Stan Reeser deferred the vote because three board members were absent. For KMUW News, I'm Daniel Cottle.
Wichita police say a man is in custody after a standoff in Old Town Monday that lasted much of the day and drew a large police presence downtown. Police say they were called to an apartment building in the 200 block of North Mosley shortly before 11 a.m. A woman inside an apartment told 911 that a man had pointed a gun at another man. Police say a SWAT team eventually entered the apartment and the armed suspect surrendered. No shots were fired. The suspect was taken into custody around 6:30 p.m. A private prison company is one step closer to opening an immigration detention center in Leavenworth, Kansas. A planning commission recommended approval after a tense public hearing that went well into the evening on Monday. Daniel McIntosh is a Leavenworth resident who opposes the planned detention center. He says the city commission should reject CoreCivic's application.
I'm not surprised. They'll got lots more chances to hope that this ends out in a way that we're not hurting people. Because when this opens, it will hurt people.
The commission added some controls, including a requirement that city officials are allowed in the facility within 2 business days of providing written notice. A CoreCivic spokesperson said that the company appreciates the recommendation and is open to discussing further conditions. Kansans for Life, an anti-abortion lobbying group, is pushing to block Medicaid funding from paying for any services at facilities that provide abortions. It's part of the group's new legislative agenda. Jean Gowden is the organization's director of government relations. She says a recent Supreme Court ruling allows the change.
So the state does have a right to be able to say, you know, this is something that we do not feel is a good use of taxpayer dollars.
The state in the past tried to block any Medicaid funding from going to abortion providers, but ultimately lost in court and ended the effort. There's currently also an effort by the federal government to cut Medicaid eligibility for some reproductive care centers. The city of Lawrence is gearing up for an influx of thousands of soccer fans in advance of the World Cup games that will be played in Kansas City. Ruth DeWitt with Explore Lawrence is helping to prepare the city for an invasion of fans and possibly teams.
We are in the running to be a base camp, and we've been told that if we are selected as a team base camp, to expect about 15,000 people to come with that.
DeWitt says it's unclear which teams may be heading to Lawrence.
We do know who is sort of vying to be here. And that made the news as, like, these teams are coming here. There is a giant gulf of logistics that happens between a team saying, sure, we want to be in Lawrence versus their being in Lawrence.
Unofficially, Lawrence is looking at hosting Algeria. Kansas City could host Argentina, the Netherlands, and England. There has been no official word from FIFA. Stargazers can help document Midwest light pollution by looking at Orion and reporting what they see. Celia Yopis Jepson of Harvest Public Media has more.
Globe at Night's 20th anniversary is this month. It's a citizen science project that helped scientists figure out that U.S. skies are getting 10% brighter per year. But there are lots of gaps in the data. Globe at Night has relatively few participants in rural areas in states like Nebraska, Iowa, the Dakotas, and parts of Kansas. This month, you can help by scoping out Orion and comparing it to several star charts on the Globe at Night website. When you pick the chart that matches what you see, it helps scientists know whether light pollution is blocking stars from your view. I'm Celia Yopis Jepson, Harvest Public Media.
The Cosmosphere in Hutchinson is hosting a watch party for the first manned flight around the moon in more than 50 years. NASA's Artemis II mission will send astronauts around the moon this month. The trip is estimated to take 10 days. The launch is currently scheduled for 10:20 p.m. this Sunday. The watch party will start 3 hours prior to the launch. The event is open to the public and will feature live coverage, hands-on activities, and presentations. Updates on the mission and the event can be found at cosmo.org. The city of Newton is celebrating its 154th birthday with community events later this month. A birthday party will be held February 21st at Newton Recreation Center. The event will feature games, family activities, and food vendors. The Newton High School Band and the Railairs Choir Group will also perform. The event is open to the public and starts at 11 a.m. Newton was established in 1872 and named after a city in Massachusetts. The city is known for its connection to the Santa Fe Trail. We'll be back after this.
Support for KMEW comes from Fidelity Bank with Business 360, banking and lending for small businesses ready to grow. Online at fidelitybank.com.
This is Wichita's Early Edition. I'm Lou Ann Stevens. It almost sounds like a bad sitcom. A French aristocrat moves to rural Kansas to start a silk-making commune. But it really happened more than 150 years ago. And although the commune failed, it can still tell us much about what life in the United States was like back then and what it's like today. Kansas Public Radio's Matthew Algio reports on the life, death, and lasting legacy of an American commune. Silkville.
What was once the Silkville Commune is now a working ranch.
And there's nearly 4,000 acres in it now. And we run Red Angus cattle and have a few horses.
Lowell Anderson and his wife Teresa have managed the ranch for more than 30 years. Lowell gave me a tour in his ATV. A handful of buildings from the old commune still stand, including a large stone barn.
Originally, it was the cocoonery. We use it as a stables or horse barn.
So this is where they kept the cocoons. I guess the silkworms would spin the cocoons, and they would use the thread to make silk right in this building.
Yes. As I understand, they did a lot of work upstairs in this building.
The original commune house could accommodate as many as 100 people. It burned down in 1916, and a smaller house was built using the ruins. That's where Lowell and Teresa live. He says the old buildings have a lot of quirks.
There's a lot of things you see that you wonder why in the world they would have done that. But it's...
Do you ever sense ghosts?
No.
Come on.
I know people who have, but yeah, mostly up in the house.
What do they say?
Oh my gosh. I'm not repeating those stories. I don't believe them. The wildest one I heard was some people went upstairs and came down, and the ghost had set the table at the dining room table, was all set with silverware and plates and glasses and things.
So at least they're helpful ghosts.
They are. They're, yeah, friendly.
Communes like Silkville were relatively common in 19th century America. University of Kansas Emeritus Professor of Religious Studies Timothy Miller has studied these groups, which academics call intentional communities.
There were several popular movements. This is the time of the Young Republic. We're still out there, you know, feeling like we're pioneers doing a wonderful new piece of work and doing a lot of experimentation, I think, in a lot of fields of life. But one of the fields that really got a lot of action in the toward the mid-19th century was the world of intentional communities, communal living. And there were several particular movements. The one that has to do with Silkville was known as Fourierism.
Fourierism is based on the writings of the French philosopher Charles Fourier, who promoted communal living as the cure to poverty and disorder. Some of his beliefs were idiosyncratic. When society achieved perfection, he believed, the oceans would turn into lemonade. But the more practical aspects of his utopianism proved highly influential throughout the 19th century. Karl Marx was a fan. So was Ernest de Boissier, the French aristocrat who founded Silkville in 1870.
He had pine tree plantations and was a big producer of turpentine from that. So he took his very considerable fortune and came to the U.S. The U.S. was still the place of opportunity, the place where a lot of people thought this is the future being enacted. And I think one other factor that led a lot of people to move here and do various kinds of experiments here was the fact that land was very, very cheap. In fact, the government gave away a lot of land, basically.
De Boissier had another reason to come to America. His socialist views made him an enemy of the French Emperor, Napoleon III, and De Boissier was reportedly advised to go abroad for his health. Eventually, he made his way to Kansas.
For various reasons, he came here and he checked out some sites, and finally he settled upon this tract in Franklin County, Kansas, down in the southwest corner of the county, southwest of Ottawa.
De Boissier recruited about 50 fellow-minded Frenchmen and women to join him in what was formerly known as the Kansas Cooperative Farm. He also imported thousands of silkworms from Asia and planted hundreds of mulberry trees to feed them. Silkworms love to eat mulberry leaves.
Why silk? Well, you know, you've got a community, you've got to have an industry, right? So he was really taken with silk. But I think it was just an economic venture. They thought that this was going to be a good thing.
With his long, flowing white beard and dark, piercing eyes, Ernest de Boissier cut a striking figure. But he was not a strict socialist. While most members of the commune lived together in the big house, some were allowed to rent land from de Boissier and build their own homes.
Yeah, this wall fell down probably 15 years ago, and it just kind of pushed it on in. And
back at the ranch, Lowell shows me a crumbling stone house standing lonely in a field. There's not much left of it. The roof is caved in, and just three walls are standing. At least the cattle like it. One corner of the house has been worn smooth by generations of Black Angus rubbing their heads against the stones. This ruin on the windswept prairie was once the home of Claude and Benoit Clair, a couple from France who came to Silkville around 1870. Janelle Richardson is Claude and Benoit's great-great-granddaughter, and she has studied her family's history.
Yes, they came to America. And as far as I know, they came direct. I have some evidence that would suggest that.
Why did they go to Silkville?
Who knows? I think they must have known something about the possibility of a commune.
Do you know if either Claude or Benoit were socialists? I mean, were they believers in the cause?
It would suggest that they might have been.
Claude and Benoit had a daughter named Marguerite, who was 12 when the family moved to Silkville. Marguerite, Janelle's great-grandmother, attended the commune's one-room schoolhouse.
I have some of her letters, and somehow she got a pretty good education because her penmanship and her grammar was very good.
In fact, the commune boasted a library with more than 2,000 titles, said to be the largest in the state at the time. There were also other entertainments, including occasional parties. But there were problems, too. Many members were lured away from the commune by lucrative opportunities in the rapidly developing West. Others left to find husbands and wives. Marguerite Claire was sent to work in Dodge City, where she fell in love with a German immigrant named Louis Rinn. Marguerite and Louis married and went on to have 9 children.
One of the sons was very successful in a pool hall, an auto dealer, and the other was a farmer and auctioneer, and their grandchildren became lawyers and all kinds of things.
What ultimately killed the Silkville commune, however, wasn't losing members, it was losing money. The silk the commune made was highly regarded for its quality, but Professor Timothy Miller says it was too expensive.
They did pretty well in some ways, but they could not make it cost-effective to compete with China, basically.
What really killed Silkville was tariffs, or more precisely, the lack of tariffs on imported silk. While many American businesses enjoyed the protection of tariffs in the 19th century, silk makers did not. By the early 1880s, Silkville was abandoned. Ernest de Boissier returned to France, where he died in 1894 at the age of 82. Most of the other members of the commune scattered across the United States, weaving themselves into the fabric of the nation.
It's in the around 22 feet around.
A few of the mulberry trees planted by the commune more than 150 years ago still stand. Survivors of blizzards and tornadoes, droughts and floods, their roots now deep in the Kansas soil. Reporting from what used to be Silkville, Kansas, I'm Matthew Algio.
Thanks for joining us for Wichita's Early Edition. We'll be back again tomorrow. For KMUW News, I'm Lou Ann Stevens.
Wichita's Early Edition is part of the NPR Podcast Network.
This week on Into Music, Parliament funkadelic guitarist Michael Hampton explains why he's not a drummer.
You put the drum set upstairs, and my parents sleep downstairs. They would have been right up underneath it. It wasn't going to happen.
That's Into Music, this and every Thursday from KMUW. Find it at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.